Welcome to On Background here on WKXL 1-9, 1450 and ConcordNewsRadio.com. I am Chris Reinel with Paul Steinhauser. On Background is presented by the New Hampshire Healthcare Association, caring for those who care for you. New Hampshire Healthcare Association. Check them out at nhhca.org. We have a great edition of On Background for you today, and we're going to start with looking at the government shutdown. It was only 3 days, but its political ramifications may be felt for, well, perhaps this year, as individuals making the determination who are running for office as to where they would have fallen if they were, in fact, in office and voting to begin the shutdown and end the shutdown. And that was a big topic of conversation in the a forum which was held with First Congressional District candidates, and Paul Steinhauser was at that. Paul, tell us about the event and also your conversation with Chris Pappas.
Well, of course. Thanks, Chris. And the event was hosted by the Rockingham County Democrats. They're going to be inviting all of the seven congressional candidates in the first district, all of them trying, of course, to succeed Carol Shea Porter in the first district. That is probably I'm being definitive here. That is the best congressional race in the country. And one of the big topics that voters and activists were asking about was the shutdown and the agreement by Democrats in the U.S. Senate to end the shutdown in return for a promise for a vote on the Dreamers in the U.S. Senate. That vote, both our two senators here in New Hampshire, Democrats Maggie Hassan and Jean Shaheen, both voted in favor of that, as did in the House of Representatives Annie Custer, our congresswoman in the 2nd District. But in the 1st District, Carol Shea Porter, who, of course, is retiring, she voted against the agreement, and many liberals were upset with it. They said it didn't go far enough. There's no guarantee that there's going to be any vote for Dreamers in the House of Representatives. So I asked Chris Pappas about that. Would he vote in favor or against if he was in the House? He said he would vote against, and here's more of what he told me.
No, I think that the way that Congress has been doing business is not the way you would run your household or your small business. And we got to make sure that there's a different way of doing business that we can push forward in the next term. You know, I just think when we reach these cliffs every few months where the government's going to shut down if there's not some kind of an agreement, we need something that's longer term. That invest in things like our opioid response and community health centers, doesn't leave the status of 800,000 Dreamers in question. And I was very skeptical that Paul Ryan and the House Republicans were going to be able to come forward with something meaningful to address those needs. So I'm glad that our delegation worked hard to create a conversation and, you know, allow us to extend CHIP by 6 years. We've got more work to do, and we'll see what comes up by February 8th.
There's another big issue right now where Congresswoman Custer and Congresswoman Shea Porter disagree, and that's whether Donald Trump should be impeached. Shea Porter supports efforts right now to do that, and Custer says, no, now is not the time. If you were in Congress right now, would you be supporting those efforts or not?
I think some of the information that we're hearing is very concerning that's been coming out of this investigation. I think it's really important that the Mueller investigation continue. Goes forward, gets all the information out on the table so that we can have a full and transparent reckoning of exactly what happened in this election. There are investigations happening at the congressional level as well that I think need to continue to, you know, press on. So I think that pushing for impeachment right now is premature. I think that is a solemn responsibility of members of the House of Representatives. And I think that we would benefit from having all the facts out on the table before anything like that is considered.
Do you think, though, the president has committed some impeachable offenses that may be warranted for impeachment down the road?
Well, I think there is the possibility that there was collusion between his campaign and a foreign power, which is really dangerous and destructive for our electoral process and the confidence that people have in our democracy. So there's some really serious issues at stake here, and I want to wait and see what all the facts look like.
Big field, seven candidates. It's a healthy sign that there's a lot of enthusiasm right now among Democrats, and maybe a little just pent up ambitions with Carol Shea Porter, you know, having the seat for so long. I'm curious, though. You're the only one with a lot of state government experience. Minnie Mesmer won one term in the state house. Do you think that experience kind of separates you from the rest of the gang? And do you think that experience is needed to run for Congress?
Yeah, I think that having state level experience is really valuable. You know, I look at Senator Hassan, for instance, and what she's been able to do in Washington, D.C., where she's had the experience of being at the State House, working closely with Republicans, finding common ground, and working toward meaningful solutions. That's what we're able to do in New Hampshire. You know, we can roll up our sleeves and attack problems head on. And so my state experience on the Executive Council, to me, is very valuable because, you know, I've had conversations with folks. We've addressed issues like Medicaid expansion and Planned Parenthood funding. That type of model, I think, is desperately needed in Washington, where we can have a conversation across the aisle and move the ball forward.
You're very well known in Manchester, obviously, and in your district in the Manchester area. Not so much out here in the Seacoast. And there are five of the candidates that are running are from the Seacoast on the Democratic side. Do you think you have to work a little harder and spend a little more time out here because of that?
Well, no one's going to outwork me in this campaign. And we're going to be going to every part of this district early and often. And the Seacoast is going to be an important focus of our campaign. We've got some good early support in the Seacoast area, and we're going to be looking forward to getting into living rooms in each and every community and having a conversation about what's at stake in this election. I think that I bring to the table a progressive record of getting things done in Concord and a perspective that I think is needed in Washington of a small business owner. So I'm going to be talking about what I've been doing for the communities of New Hampshire and how it can best represent people in the Seacoast and all across the state.
You know, I've been interviewing all the candidates in the first district race. And when I interviewed one of your rivals here for the Democratic nomination, Maura Sullivan, it was interesting. On Twitter, soon after, there were a lot of people who criticized her for being a carpetbagger. She just moved here last year. Do you think that's a valid argument, a valid criticism of her?
You know, I'll let the people of New Hampshire decide on that. I mean, I just know that as someone who is rooted in the communities of New Hampshire, I feel like I have the experience in the issues and the understanding of the values of the state to be able to effectively represent it in Congress.
Also, one other thing she made some news with earlier this month was an eye-popping number on fundraising. And I know that's not the end-all. Listen, money matters, but it's not the most important thing. Do you think you'll have the funds needed to wage an effective campaign?
Absolutely. And we've been really, humbled by the amount of support that our campaign has been attracting in terms of endorsements, in terms of people signing up online, and also in terms of folks that have been chipping into our effort. And this is largely a New Hampshire-based effort, and people are investing in our campaign because they're excited about what my candidacy represents and what we're going to be able to do in Washington.
Chris Pappas, thanks for coming to Exeter. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Interesting comments there from Pappas about Maura Sullivan. Of course, she's the former U.S. Marine who worked, and she was an Iraq War vet. She served in the Pentagon and then at the VA under the Obama administration. She moved here to New Hampshire, to Portsmouth, just last year, and some people are criticizing her as a carpetbagger. You saw, you know, Pappas wouldn't say that, but yeah, he was sure to highlight that his campaign is a New Hampshire campaign. That $430,000 that she raised in the fourth quarter, an eye-popping number, but 80% of that came from out of state. So you're going to hear this dynamic going forward. And Chris, one more thing. We started all of this out talking about the deal to end the shutdown. Six of the seven Democrats running in the first district, including Pappas, you heard him there, said they would not vote in favor of that deal if they were in Congress. The only one who said she would have supported it was Maura Sullivan.
Interesting stuff right there. And we'll hear from Senator Shaheen on that in just a few moments, her rationale behind working with a bipartisan group to end the shutdown. But you also spoke with Chris Sununu regarding school choice.
I did. Earlier this week, Governor Sununu was at a big event. It's School Choice Week, National School Choice Week, and the governor was the headliner at an event of school choice advocates here in the Granite State. It took place in Manchester. You had a lot of school children who support it. And, of course, this comes as there's a bill that's making its way through the State House of Representatives right now that would create these educational savings accounts, which would allow parents, some parents in the state, to take the taxpayer money that goes to their children right now for a public school. They would be able to use that to send their children to either private or parochial school or even homeschool. It's a very controversial issue, and opponents say that this is probably going to end up in court. I asked the governor about that. Here's what he said.
There's always going to be legal challenges to major pieces of legislation like this. Unfortunately, it's par for the course for groups like the ACLU or whoever's going to get involved. But again, one of the reasons why we're taking our time, we're doing it right, we're getting public input, we're making sure that the bill doesn't just make sense for parents, make sense for the state, but make sure that any potential legal challenges can be upheld. We're taking our time. We're doing it right.
One last cookie. You know, as you run for re-election later this year, getting full-day kindergarten, that's a very big deal. I would assume huge. You'll be touting that.
I think it's a huge deal.
What about this, though? Is this like going to be part of that? If you get school choice, is that going to be part of the re-election?
You know, given all the successes we had in 2017 and the many that I'm expecting for 2018, we're just going to run on all the different successes we've had because there's something in there for everyone. We fought hard for veterans. We fought hard for seniors. We fought hard for school choice. We fought hard for better health care. We fought hard for regulatory reform. I mean, we can keep going down the list, and I think all of them are going to be touted because we've really tried to, again, put politics aside, making sure that we got great successes, got the job done for New Hampshire, and again, we'll let the voters decide where we need to go. But again, given all the success we've had, the fact that we have the fastest growing economy in the Northeast for the first time, the fastest growing population for the first time, we're driving young families into New Hampshire, they're seeing the changes we've made, it's all very positive stuff, and my sense is the voters in New Hampshire want to keep the momentum going, and that's what we're going to tell.
All right, Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu. I talked with Governor Sununu as well. We'll hear that later on in the program, as he has done a tremendous job in playing the John Lynch card, if you will, being known by voters here in the Granite State, developing personal relationships, being everywhere in order to create a positive and lasting image with voters that combats whether it's a bill that they don't agree with or negative advertising during the course of the campaign. My conversation with him still to come. But up next, U.S. Senator Jeanne Shaheen joins us to discuss her thoughts on the shutdown and her rationale for ending the shutdown with a bipartisan group of senators on Monday after 3 days. This is On Background here on KXL, presented by the New Hampshire Healthcare Association. Welcome back. This is On Background here on 1059, 1450 and ConcordNewsRadio.com. I am Chris Ryan. On Background is presented by the New Hampshire Healthcare Association. I'm joined by Paul Steinhauser for this weekly roundup show of politics here in the first in the nation primary state. So I talked with Jeanne Shaheen earlier this week, just after the shutdown concluded. It was a 3-day government shutdown. We talked about the rationale for Democrats in ending the shutdown. In doing so, Shaheen worked with a group of about 20 to 25 senators who were able to come together on a bipartisan basis to end the shutdown. The question is, will they be able to work together more moving forward? Do you have, you know, any assurances from Leader McConnell about, you know, his allowance of bills from this group, which obviously includes Republicans, you know, to be heard? Because obviously one of the challenges has been for Democrats, you know, even having amendments being able to be offered. And we've talked about, you know, a solution from the middle in regards to health care and infrastructure and other issues in the past. The challenge, of course, is allowing for this group's bills to be voted upon and so forth. Do you have any assurances that that the leader will allow for that?
Well, part of the compromise agreement that reopened the government was a commitment from Senator McConnell, not just to Chuck Schumer and the Democrats, but to all those people who were in the negotiations on his side of the aisle, all those Republicans who said, we need you to make this commitment that if we can't reach an agreement around DACA before February the 8th, that he will bring a neutral bill to the floor. He will give people on both sides of the issue the opportunity to have amendments, to debate the issue, and we will bring it to a vote. And as you point out, if that happens, it will be the first time Democrats would have amendments on the floor of the Senate in this Congress.
Which is, you know, unbelievable. And I'd be saying it, obviously, if it were the other side doing the same thing. It's absolutely unbelievable because our government has, you know, just about any American would acknowledge, is best when individuals are allowed to work together. And that is not even what is taking place. On the shutdown itself, take us through, you know, your thought process throughout this, where obviously you voted for the shutdown initially. There's been criticism that the bill that was approved after the shutdown is pretty much, you know, exactly the same as the one that you voted against prior to that. What led to kind of the decision making that first you decided that it was a good idea to move forward with this, and then to avert the shutdown with this group later?
Well, my concern about the continuing resolution in the first place is that we need to find a way to fund our government long term. We can't keep lurching from 1 month continuing resolutions that keep the government open and keep people questioning what's going to happen next. It's not good for our men and women in the military. We had General Mattis come to see us on both sides of the aisle in the Senate and say, please don't do another continuing resolution. Please give us some certainty in the budget process. It's not good for our domestic needs. As we know, we need more resources to help us with the opioid epidemic. We need more resources to help with our veterans' health care, with our infrastructure. So we need some certainty on the domestic side of the budget as well. And we need to make sure that there's some parity with what we're funding. So that was one big issue for me. And the bill that I voted for does two things differently.
Mm-hmm.
One is it shortens the time frame in which we've got to make a decision on this long-term funding package for the government. And so hopefully it puts some more pressure on us in the Senate and the House to get that budget deal done. And it also gave us a vote and an opportunity to debate the DACA program. So I think that was very important. You know, sadly, we got into this situation because President Trump decided he was going to change the status of those dreamers, the young people who are here through no fault of their own, who are Americans for all intents and purposes. They pledge allegiance to the United States. It's the only country they've known. They want to work here. They want to join the military. They want to go to college. They want to have full citizenship. And what the president did was to say, we're not going to honor your living in the United States anymore, and we're going to deport you come March 5th if Congress can't reach a decision. So we've got some urgency to reach a decision, and hopefully now we can get that done.
So there's been, reflecting on that, there's been some question as to why DACA became a part of the, you know, the budget process. Certainly you can see, you know, the wall and the infrastructure for the wall and so forth being a part of the budget process because, you know, that has to be budgeted. You know, for me, I think we take it back to the fact that there have been no Democratic amendments and that Democrats have, you know, very limited opportunity to make a statement. And DACA is obviously very important to Democrats as it is to, you know, millions of Americans. And in fact, 87% of Americans want the Dreamers to stay. But the question is, you know, how it got tied in with the budget process. For Democrats, was this kind of maximizing, you know, their greatest opportunity to force, you know, the president and others to recognize what President Obama had previously instituted in regards to the Dreamers?
Well, as I think most people appreciate, most negotiation around legislation and government is compromise, and this was an opportunity to address an issue that many people on the left felt was important, as well as addressing what many people on the right are concerned about, and that's other priorities in government. So I think what we agreed to is hopefully not just how to address DACA, but it's a way forward to say, how are we going to work together to get the funding for the government done in a way that we aren't going from one short-term funding bill to another short-term funding bill? And for me, that was the issue. People had different reasons for voting the way they did, but for me, I thought it was important to take a stand, just as a number of people have said, that we can't continue to fund the government this way. We passed the fourth continuing resolution, which is a short-term government funding solution, this fiscal year, and we're not even 4 months into the year.
Right.
So we've got to stop doing that. It's not good for the country. As I said, it's not good for the men and women who are serving in our military. It's not good for people who are dependent for Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid. Those programs continue, but there's a lot of uncertainty around it. For employees who work for the federal government, it's not good. And for people who contract with the government, it's not good. So we have a lot of all of those people in New Hampshire, and we need to give them some assurances that we're gonna stop doing this for partisan advantage, and we're going to start working together. And that, again, is what I think is positive about this bipartisan group, our Common Sense Coalition that worked together over the weekend.
That's U.S. Senator Jeanne Shaheen. A couple of things quickly with you here on the program before we conclude. Because of the fact that after 3 days, you were able to, you know, avert the shutdown moving forward and agreed to these terms, do you feel that... Obviously, it could be argued that that was the greatest leverage that you had in shutting down the government in order to create a solution in regards to DACA. Do you feel that, you know, now Republicans have greater negotiating power, if you will, in that you've used the, you know, the most significant card in your deck, if you will, in shutting down the government? And what assurances do you have that, in fact, this will happen, and that they will recognize, and Mitch McConnell will recognize the promise that he made in regards to this legislation. And what do you do if he doesn't?
Well, the assurances that I have are that all of those Republicans who sat in the room and made a commitment that they were going to work to make sure that Majority Leader McConnell follows through on his commitment is going to happen. As we all said, we've got each other's backs. It's up to each of us to hold everyone's feet to the fire and say we need to address these issues, whether it's DACA or the long-term funding solution, and we've got to work together to do that. So that, for me, is, again, the most positive thing. And I think our continuing to meet, our continuing to work together to address these issues is very important.
In conclusion, on the opioid crisis, you mentioned one of the keys in regards to long-term funding solution, a actual budget, if you will, is the funding for the opioid crisis. What are you looking for you know, specifically in terms of funding for New Hampshire, and how would you like to see that money spent?
Well, Senator Hassan and I proposed an additional $25 billion over the next 2 years. I'm not optimistic that we're going to get that amount, but I am optimistic that there is an understanding on both sides of the aisle that this is a huge problem, not just in New Hampshire, but across the country, and that we've got to help families who are really have been devastated by members of their families who have been misusing substances. And I don't know if anybody read the story over the weekend.
New York Times, yeah.
Yes, about the family in New Hampshire and about the impact on our state. They have to appreciate that we've got to do more to help people, to help communities, to provide treatment, to help with understanding that this is a disease and the only way we're going to deal with it is by working together, by supporting prevention, supporting recovery efforts, helping law enforcement make sure that we stop drugs coming into the country. So there is no silver bullet to this horrible epidemic. And what we've got to do is look at every way that we can to help make a difference for people. And we've got to provide some more federal resources to do that.
From federal issues to state issues, coming up next on Background, Jeanne Forrester, the chair of the New Hampshire GOP. Welcome back to On Background, the program that's all about New Hampshire politics, and it's brought to you each week by your good friends at the New Hampshire Healthcare Association. Well, Chris and I had a chance this week to head over to the New Hampshire GOP, the state party offices in downtown Concord. We did a little field trip. Last week, of course, we did the same thing over at the Democratic headquarters and spoke to Ray Buckley, the longtime chairman. This time we spoke with Jeanne Forrester. She's been in the job as GOP chair here in New Hampshire for about a year. Of course, before that, she ran for governor, losing in the primary to eventual nominee and eventual governor Chris Sununu. Before that, she was a state senator for a number of years. years. We started by asking Jeannie about this possible blue wave and how she's going to try to fight against that here in 2018. Take a listen.
Paul Steinhauser, we at the Hampshire GOP chair's office today, Jeannie Forrester, after on the last week's program, we talked to the Hampshire Dem chairman, Ray Buckley, and he was optimistic about his chances and about Democrats' chances in 2018. He predicted a blue wave is coming to hit the Granite State and also other areas of the nation. When you look at 2018, what do you see right now?
I actually am very optimistic for 2018. I see a red wave. When you look at the fact that you have Annie Custer and you have Carol Shea Porter, who are very, in terms of their popularity, they're down in the 30s. We've got some great candidates who are running in CD1 and CD2, and I'm confident that whoever comes out of that primary, when we put them up against whoever's running in a CD1 and 2 on the Democratic side, that we're gonna prevail.
You look at the numbers from 2017, though. The Democrats in this state won 8 of 10 state house special elections. They did well in November in the municipal elections as well. So what changes that dynamic now that we're in 2018? What's going to change come November?
Well, you know, special elections are that, just special elections, and I don't think they're a precursor. Of course, you know, the fact is that when you're the party in power, you always are off in terms of elections. But these special elections are very unique and local. I don't think it's a precursor of what's going to happen in 2018. Again, I'm very confident of the folks that we have running for office, and I think we're going to do very well. What I'm really curious to find out is the party chair on the Democratic side is going to rig the election and decide who's going to run in CD1. That's going to be interesting.
Yeah, no, what Chris and I have been talking about, we got seven Democrats running right there. There's a wide open primary, no doubt about that.
And I'm going to be curious to see with Maura Sullivan running, who came in from another state, and I think 80% of her fundraising is from out of state. I'm going to be curious to see how Mr. Buckley handles that, given his responses to Scott Brown when he was running in this state.
One of the interesting aspects of the 2016 race for candidates like Kelly Ayotte, John McCain, Rob Portman, Chris Sununu was how to embrace but also distance themselves from Donald Trump at the same time. Now it's President Trump. There's a record. There's more statements. There's obviously individuals who believe very strongly in him, individuals who are against him, and then they have the middle. He was looking for, you know, results to make the determination as to what they think about the president. What do you think Republicans need to do in regards to Donald Trump in 2018? Should they embrace him? Should they run away from him? How do they go about dealing with that dynamic?
I don't think it's either, actually, Chris. I think that each candidate, whoever comes out of the primary, has to decide where they stand on certain issues. I've said this many, many times, that you're not going to agree on all things. You figure out the things you can agree on, and then you emphasize those issues. There are a lot of good things that this president has done. The way he presents sometimes doesn't sit well with other people. But here in New Hampshire, we are New Hampshire Republicans, and we are getting things done. We've got a governor who has a, 62% approval rating. 75% of the people in the state believe we're headed in the right direction. We are getting things done. We're holding the majorities in the House and the Senate, the Executive Council, the corner office, and we're getting things done, and we've got a very popular governor. As regards to the federal race, again, we've got great candidates. They're going to decide. I'm not going to answer for them how they're going to embrace or run away from Donald Trump, but I think he's done a lot of good things. I think we've got some smart candidates who'll know how to navigate that.
If this election is a referendum on Donald Trump, can Republicans win?
I don't think it will be, and I think Republicans can win. It's interesting. I was at a Chamber of Commerce breakfast this morning, and I actually had somebody, a reporter, come up to me and tell me that she hears from the common folks, the regular folks she runs into every day, that there is a lot of support for this president and the things that he's doing, and that the media, you know, the negativity, they're not speaking out much the same way when everyone said he wasn't going to win, right? That they're just keeping quiet, but the support is there. And so when I look at these polls, I'm not sure I believe these polls because there seems to be a lot of support for what he's doing. And, you know, he brought tax reform to us. First time in 30 years. He's done some good things, but you can't always hear about that because there's so much negativity on the side of the press. Not you, Chris.
No, I'm obviously not referring to me. Paul?
Two questions, Chair. First is, you mentioned Governor Sununu. He's got very good approval ratings right now. He had a very good legislative session in 2017. So is it going to be, at least when it comes to the state house races, as you try to keep control of the chambers, is it going to be a referendum on Governor Sununu rather than Donald Trump? Is that going to be the main theme for those races?
I think certainly we're gonna stick close to what the governor's doing because he is so popular. But again, I would say that the Senate's doing very well. The House has done very well. We've worked together with the governor to get things done in the state of New Hampshire. So I think Republicans and the candidates are going to prove themselves out, and we're going to prevail in 2018.
How about the state party? Looking back at 2017, you went about 7 or 8 months without an executive director. Then one was hired and I guess unfortunately had to leave 2 months later. I know you have a new one in just in the last couple of weeks. Fundraising, okay, but you didn't break any records. Is the party in good shape? Is the party ready for 2018?
We will be ready for 2018. You're exactly right. We didn't have an executive director for quite a while. When I came in, I kind of really looked at everything, where we needed to cut back, what we could get away with in an off-election cycle, where do we need to spend our resources. We did some great things in 2017. We had 11 interns in through our IGOP program. We had our Red Summit, which was a huge success. We had a communications summit. We did a lot of good things without an executive director. And going into 2018, I'm feeling very confident as I go out and talk to the business community and get the financial support that we're looking for, that we will be able to raise the funds that we need to help our candidates get through these races.
That's Jeanne Forrester, chair of the New Hampshire GOP, joining us here on Background on WKXL. And here comes a little of my patented negativity. So you're citing Governor Sununu's polls being popular governor at 62%. Well, the same polls have Donald Trump at 42%. Why do you believe the polls in regards to Chris Sununu, but not in regards to Donald Trump?
Well, I think they're two very different people. And Chris Sununu is very positive, upbeat. It's very much New Hampshire. Donald Trump says what he thinks. Some people, he can be very controversial. And just like I go back to when everybody said he was going to lose, and the polls showed he was going to lose. That there's this underground current of people who support him who don't want to come out and talk about it because they don't want the conflict, the controversy, they don't want to deal with it. And so they're two very different people.
So are you more confident, in other words, that the election in 2018 is going to be, the masthead is going to be Chris Sununu here in New Hampshire as opposed to Donald Trump? And how do you go about creating, that environment so that when individuals are thinking about 2018 election, they think about Sununu or they think about the individual candidate? I mean, is there a way to circumvent the discussion and create the discussion where so the discussion is not in regards to candidate X reacting to Donald Trump saying this about this, or this happening in Washington, D.C., this person being fired, this new investigation taking place? How do candidates, in your view, take control of the narrative and refocus it back to what you wanted to focus on?
So I think they take control of the narrative again by talking about all the good things that we've done in the state of New Hampshire and on a federal level, really focusing on the fact that the Democrats have been obstructive, the fact that we have two congressional Congress people who are very unpopular, and we're going to push it back on the Democrats. They're the ones who are being obstructive. They're the ones who are not helping us get things done. Donald Trump brought us tax reform. He's done a lot of good things. We've done a lot of good things in this state. So it's not, I think you need to flip it a little bit and really say, what's going on with the Democrats?
You ran for governor back in 2016. I'm wondering, This job is up in about a year. I know it's about a year away, but is this a job you like? Is this a job you think you'd want to do for another term and maybe another run for elective office down the road? Not ruling that out?
Well, not ruling out another run for an elective office down the road. Don't know what that will be, what that'll look like. I really have to look at the landscape. Right now, I'm focused on getting Governor Sununu back in the corner office, getting our majorities in the House and the Senate to grow, and not thinking much past that right now.
Tom Rath was on my show earlier this week, and he lamented the kind of constant negativity that he sees from this office and from the New Hampshire Democratic Party. Has that been the kind of the bitter partisanship aspect of things, where you are, you know, first and foremost a Republican, either Republican chair, and have to, you know, toe that line or create that line in some circumstances? Has that been something that you have, you know, disliked about this job? A and B, you know, do you agree that there is too much negativity between the two parties?
There is negativity. There's always that challenge: is it negative or is it contrast? What are you trying to do? We've done an awful lot of positive out of this office, so I'm hoping that Tom is seeing that. Yes, I mean, I've always been a positive person, always worked towards positive things, and so yeah, it's a little bit of a different role for me, and something some days, you know, not so excited about. But I think it is important to always really highlight the contrast, because they're doing it on the other side. And so you'd say, well, if they stop, will you stop? But yeah, if you watch TV, you saw that Chairman Buckley and I were on TV together, and we know how to get along, and we've been in different venues together, and know how to be civil, have civil discourse. But that's politics.
Well, then, with that, let's invite you and Ray, Chairman Buckley, together maybe next time on this show right here on Background. That'd be great.
Yeah, that'd be great. I'd like to see, you know, in the spirit of what Tom was talking about, kind of there to be a line drawn in terms of civil discourse. And for, you know, I've talked with Governor Sununu and Senator Shaheen and others about this, how, you know, from my perspective in the middle, the focus even for the party should be on problem solving. And I'm hopeful that, you know, perhaps you two can come together, and particularly as we gear up for 2018, kind of draw a line as to, you know, what the discourse should be.
Yep.
Well, I'm a campaign reporter, and I got to file almost every day for the newspapers and for it. So, Chris, I'm going to disagree with you on that one. I want you and Chairman Buckley to continue to go at it. It makes headlines for me.
Well, thank you so much for having us. It's always great to see you, Jeannie, and best of luck.
Thanks so much, Chris. Thanks.
All right, that is Jeannie Forrester, chair of the New Hampshire Republican Party, here on Background on KXL, presented by the New Hampshire Healthcare Association. I'm Chris Ryan, along with Paul Steinhauser. When we return, Chris Sununu on the night job of being governor in the state of New Hampshire. Day job, you're over at the State House, you're working on policy. During the nighttime, you are meeting voters and attending event after event to try to create some positive vibes amongst low-information voters, regular, average, everyday folks. Back with more on Background after this. Welcome back. This is On Background here on 159, 1450 and ConcordNewsRadio.com. I am Chris Ryan. I appreciate you joining us for the program. Well, in politics, one of the best ways in a state like New Hampshire to create a positive vibe amongst voters, a positive image, is to be as accessible as possible. We've seen it, you know, through the course of time, whether it's in the primary or whether it's elected officials like John Lynch, who was at every Boy Scout broadcast, county fair, ice jam event across the state of New Hampshire. The blueprint has been created But I would say that Chris Sununu is as good as any quote-unquote retail politician we've seen.
Yeah, Chris, you look at his schedule, and he's doing a lot of these events, especially in the afternoon and evening, and I think that's going to increase as we get closer to Election Day. You know, I had a chance to catch him earlier this week. We heard the sound earlier at that large school choice rally. He was really working the room. He was almost in campaign mode, shaking hands, being friendly, talking to the kids. It really seemed like he was almost in re-election mode, Chris.
Well, he also played in a basketball game against the Harlem Wizards. Nobody's going to mistake Governor Sununu for Kyrie Irving. And we started with joking a little bit about his basketball game.
Joined by Chris Sununu as his team taking on the Harlem Wizards at Bishop Brady High School. And I promised the listeners an in-depth analysis of your game. We'll start with the fact that you are a player coach. Your coaching style very reminiscent of Casey Jones. In terms of your playing, you're left-handed. Bill Russell was left-handed, but that's where the comparison ends.
I think you're spot on with the analysis right now. I'd just like to note that we're playing the Harlem Wizards, and as the coach, we're only down by five. So I'm going to take a little bit of credit for that. I'm not quite sure what's going on out there, but we're all having a good time.
It's not how you get to the results. It's the results that matter, clearly. But getting aside, this is a part of, obviously, your outreach as governor. You want to be as accessible as possible and do events like this and be out there and support and show New Hampshire. How big of a role do you think that is being in governor?
Well, in New Hampshire, you got to be. You got to be accessible. You got to be out there. I mean, one thing that I try to do is there's so many nonprofits and charitable organizations, and this is a great example of one, where communities really come together. It's really how we define ourselves as a state, as a community. We rely on each other. So this is just a great example of it. I mean, we were working on Medicaid earlier today. We were working on school choice. I went skiing with a bunch of disabled veterans midday, came back to the state house, worked on a few more issues with some of our nominations coming up, and then came over here, and I'm here with Senator Feltes is here and a few other folks just having a great time and supporting another great local organization that can really make a difference in people's lives. And that's what New Hampshire's all about.
It seems like there's so many of those organizations across the state. This is for Teddy's team and raising awareness for stroke as well as heart disease. And has that been surprising to you in some ways, the amount of different organizations that across the state that pop up to address various needs? People have a story, and therefore they say, okay, we're going to do this in the community, or I'm going to take on this and take this on as my nonprofit mission.
You know, in our small state, we have over 10,000 nonprofits. 10,000. I mean, that's an amazing number. So that tells you there's a lot of folks out there with a lot of heart trying to do a lot of good for a lot of people. In some cases, you want to consolidate those efforts, right? So you don't waste dollars. In some cases, there's really unique efforts in certain parts of the state. We're small, but we're diverse, right? So what happens on the Seacoast might be very different than Coos or Hillsborough or Keene. So you have to really take what's going on in the individual parts of the state. And that's why, again, as governor, you try to go out. You try to really make yourself available and travel across the state. Not just show your face as governor, but try to give confidence to other folks to get involved and try to, you know, get them a little more enthused to get involved. One thing I always tell people at events like this is we all know someone, we could a coworker, a friend, a family member that we could bring next time around, or we could get to donate or whatever it might be. So the goal should always be trying to make these organizations a little bigger, a little stronger, and that way you're going to get twice the results. So it's just great to be part of a state and part of a community that believes in community.
And concluding, is this, you know, what you expected for your governorship, to be doing, you know, Medicaid during the day and then skiing and then, you know, capping off the night playing in a charity comedic basketball game? Is this gone, you know, basically the way you wanted, or has it been more than what you expected?
You know, if things have gone how I expected, but I have to tell you, the response we get is overwhelming. And it's not a political response at all, right? There's nothing political about any of this. It's just about having a great response where I think people understand that you're coming out, they want to come out, they want to be part of something that has energy, that's positive, that's making a difference in the community. We use social media a lot to publicize, you know, not just what I'm doing, but what other charities and local organizations across the state are doing. So when you can publicize that and push it out there, a lot of folks will come up and say, hey, we didn't know that this organization was even involved, or we didn't know this event was happening. So it's just about kind of making everybody aware of what's going on in their community, because, again, we are a state that wants to give, that wants to help, that wants to rely on one another, and it's just great to be a part of it.
Interesting stuff there from Governor Sununu. And, you know, right now, Steve Marchand, the only Democratic opponent.
You think that's going to change?
I think that's going to change, and it's probably going to change in the next month or so. We've talked about it. I think there's a good chance Colin Van Osteren could jump in. Mm-hmm. slight chance maybe Dan Feltes, the state senator for Concord, and maybe a certain former congressman who maybe hosts a show here at the station. I don't know. Chris, I'm going to leave that one to you.
Yeah, we'll see if whether Paul Hodes gets in or not. If Colin and Feltes don't run, I think that there's a chance. I'm not going to say it's a good chance or a significant chance, but I think there's a chance that Paul Hodes runs.
What would you rather do? Be a host here at KXL or be the governor? Now, come on, hands down, we know the answer.
You'd rather work with me.
There you go.
All right, this is On Background here on KXL, presented by the New Hampshire Healthcare Association. That was Paul Steinhauser. I am Chris Ryan. Look forward to talking to you again next week.